Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and if you want to hear some really cool stuff, I'm here with Wolfie D. Jimmy, don't miss it.
Hey, this is Jimmy Street, host of the Live and in Color with Wolfie D. podcast. Hear the life and times of professional wrestler Wolfie D. From his time in the territories with PG-13 to his time in WWE, ECW, WCW, TNA, and more. Nothing is off limits and nothing will be held back. Thanks again for tuning in. Here he is, Wolfie D.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to Live and in Color with Wolfie D and my man Jimmy across the street. And today we got the doctor on call today. So, Jimmy, are you excited that we got Tom Pritchard on today, man?
Yes, I'm very excited. I got to give Tom credit on this too, by the way. Okay. So we had another interview lined up. And it was like to the 23rd hour, basically, about to happen. And then an issue with their shooter comes up and we have to, not an active shooter, the shoot job for all you listeners out there. Sorry, Wolfie understood what I said. Their job. So he said, hey, I can't do it. And then, of course, everything fell apart from there. Good thing you had recently seen Dr. Tom at the Heroes and Legends in lovely Pigeon Forge or Sevierville or wherever. And he came through for us in the literal last minute. It was like, okay, it's in a pinch, clutch.
We had to call the doctor to the ER.
Yes. So thank you, Dr. Tom. And I think, you know, I just can't wait to talk to him now, you know, so.
Yeah, he's such a fun dude, man, and a different character, but God, I love him to death, man. What a cool dude. Yeah. You'll see, as we talk to him here in just a little bit, we'll be sure and ask him about, kind of current affair right now, you know, when we record.
It's a current affair!
This happened, I guess, yesterday. By the time this drops, it'll have been almost a week, I guess. But superstar Billy Graham passed away.
And, yeah.
I'm sure Tom's got something to say about that, a story or something. So we'll be sure to ask. But yeah, what a loss, you know. And, you could look at Hulk Hogan, look at Jesse Ventura. How many guys?
Scott Steiner. Dusty.
Yeah, guys piggybacked off of his stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean, the more legitimate, like, direct influence was for sure Hogan and Ventura. Of course, Scott Steiner was a later influence. You know, he said specifically, hey, I took all this from Superstar, you know. So, incredible talent. Was the earliest form of what you would call sports entertainment or the golden era. I mean, because, you know, you had guys in their woolies and shooter boots at that time. Yeah.
Possibly to his, I'm not saying he's not a famous wrestler, but maybe a little ahead of his time if he would have been a little bit later. You know what I'm saying?
Totally ahead of his time. Also kind of turned a little bit outspoken, you know, and a lot of the stuff that he said was not bad. It, you know, he told guys they should do steroids, you know, he said, obviously don't, you know, do them if you can't handle, but he, you know, a lot of the newer guys that are kind of small and they don't really, you know, they're not body guys. He's like, you know, something that would really put you over as a champion is doing steroids. You can get bigger, you know, and I mean, I think that came from a legitimate place of like, hey, look, I've seen what you can do, put some muscle on and you're perfect, you know. So anyway,
so
rest in peace.
A tragedy. I mean, everybody saw it coming. I don't guess I want to say a tragedy there, but it's sad. And he will be missed. You know, hadn't been in the ring in a long time, but definitely a legend.
Absolutely. In
professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Man, so rest in peace, Billy Graham. And man, I know we're going to have a good conversation with Tom, and you know how I am on time, man. So I think, Jimmy, we should take a break and get the doctor on the phone.
All right. We'll be right back. After what?
These messages.
Sounds good.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey folks, to get your official Live and in Color with Wolfie D merchandise, go to prowrestlingtees.com/livewolfied. Check it out.
If you're listening to Live and in Color with Wolfie D on Apple Podcast and like what you're hearing, go ahead and leave a 5-star rating. And while you're at it, write a review. Tell us what you liked. Tell us what you'd like to hear in the future. It's very important to us and always appreciated. Thanks again.
All right, folks, we're back. And I'm not gonna make you wait any longer. Jimmy, I'm about to introduce my next guest. I love this dude, man. He is known as the Trainer of the Stars. And he's also got a PhD in wrestling, as well as sports entertainment. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, everyone else calls him Tom Pritchard. I call him Dr. John Richards. What's up?
Hey, Wolfie, I've been waiting a long time to be on this daggum podcast. I wonder why now it's just getting on, man. What's up, man, with that? How come I haven't been able to get on your podcast for so long?
Well, I think it's because you kayfabe most of my texts. I mean, that could be the only thing.
I kayfabe all your texts. Every last one on.
I got something
about my character right there, doesn't it?
It sure does. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm the kind of people you want to hang out with. I don't think so.
We've been asking from the start, have we not, Wolfie? I mean, the heavenly bodies.
I know.
Yeah,
I know. For a while, I thought I had the wrong number. I mean, you know, then I realized.
No, you had the right number. I just don't want to talk to you, man. But I talked to you at the Heroes and Legends. You know, we were at the Heroes and Legends this weekend. We had a blast.
Yeah.
Or I had a blast. Let me say that. I'll speak for myself.
you had a blast in your type of way, which is what I love, man. Like I'm ha 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 laughing, and you're just that always in that calm mood. Me and you have this kind of chemistry that I love to death, man. Just because I would just feed off the way you are, man. Just that mellow and then that calm hilariousness about you, man. That's what just cracks me up.
You know what, though? I mean, I think it just goes back to the way I was brought up. And like, man, it goes, you know, we all got some deep-seated problems. But, you know, I just kind of figured if I can observe some stuff, I was kind of like, I'm going to wait and wait my turn and kind of zoom in for the kill or drop a bomb here, drop a bomb there, and then I'm going to walk over here and leave you to think about it for a minute. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I have a lot of fun doing that, man. It's a blast.
Yeah.
He's a psychologist. I love it.
He's a psychological assassin.
Right. So I'll say something to you and I'll leave, keeping you wondering, what do you think? And it's really, I wasn't thinking at all. It just came off the top of my head and I thought, okay, maybe I need to move before he punches me in the face.
I'll tell you one thing that's never gone away is the fact that, like, the impact that something you said to Jamie one time, and he tries to quote it and he usually fucks it up, but he tries to say it in like a proper voice. But we were sitting around, I know you probably recall, I'm kind of telling Jimmy and the listeners this, but we're sitting around and Jamie said something and Tom just real cool. Tom's always kind of kicked back in his chair, you know, and he kind of looks over at Jamie and he said, Jamie, it's better to be thought of as a fool than to open to one's mouth and remove all doubt. And some of us may have heard that before and blah, 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 but whatever. It's hilarious. And Jamie, it was like a white light shined over him. Whoa! He took this as the greatest quote he had ever heard in his life. You know?
Well, it was more like this, and I don't remember who first said it, but I read it somewhere and said, sometimes it's better to remain silent and be thought of a fool rather than speak up and remove all doubt. And that applied to me more so than anybody else. But when Jamie came along, I said, Jamie, sometimes, son, It's better you just remain silent.
Yeah.
Be thought of a dumbass and speak up and just remove any doubts we had about you. Like, no, maybe he's all right. Maybe you just don't talk a whole lot. And I had to realize that myself, because, you know, sometimes I say the dumbest shit and I go, God, what the hell did I do now? So, yeah. Yeah, but Jamie, you know what? I'll never forget that, too, because every time I see Jamie, that's the first thing he says to me, too.
First thing Dr. he says.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes you better shut up because you're stupid. People think you're stupid. No, Jamie. That's not the way it goes.
Right. That's so funny.
That was Abraham Lincoln, by the way, that really said that.
Yeah.
When I intro'd you, you know, I said the Dr. John. I want you to tell, I don't know if you really ever told it before, and I remember parts of it, of how it came about, where everybody calls you Dr. John. I mean, a certain circle of people call you that, I guess. I'm not sure who all does, but at any rate, I think it was Billy Joe Travis that turned me on to calling you that. I just can't call you anything since then.
Yeah, that's cool. No, it was me, Jeff Jarrett, and Road Dogg. We were coming out of the, it wasn't the Coliseum. What was that building they used after they used the Mid-South Coliseum?
Pipkin building.
That was it. Yeah, we were coming out of the Pipkin building one time, and this guy came up to us, goes, "Hey, Double J, Road Dogg. Hey, you, Dr. John Richards." And I went, "Oh, man." Road Dogg looked at me and said, "Dr. John Richards." From then on, I became Dr. John Richards.
That would have been the like 96, 97 probably is when I started, I guess, right?
No, it was earlier than that.
Oh, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah, it was when I was working in Memphis for the last time. And dang, yeah, I don't remember. I was babyface then, too, but yeah, the last time. That had to have been the late 80s.
Oh,
cause that was right.
I was just, when you said Brian being there, I was thinking his run is right before he went up to Vince and everything, like the late 90s, when y'all were, me and Jamie was wrestling you and Jimmy Del Rey, like in Smoky Mountain a little bit, and then in Memphis a little bit. I was thinking it was right around that time. But yeah, the Dr. John story, man, I can never forget. I just cannot call you Tom Richard ever again.
Yeah, there's a lot of people since then have been calling me Dr. John. I don't mind. I like being Dr. John Richards. I write on my water bottle at school, or any water I might have, I write Dr. John on it.
Nice.
So it's Dr. John.
Nice.
So they know. Yeah, I need them to know.
Man, hey, you know, to take it down, not to make it non-funny, but man, what about superstar Billy Graham, you know, just passed away. I unfortunately never had the pleasure of meeting him. I'm sure you probably have. Do you have a good, funny superstar Billy Graham story?
I tell you what, so I met Billy Graham in Houston when I was taking pictures from the time I was 12 years old. And then I started working in a wrestling office when I was 15, man. So I was like about 14, 15 years old when I met superstar Billy Graham, taking pictures in the ring and stuff. And then later on, you know, when I started working for WWE and he came around, he said he remembered me, but I don't know if he did or not. But we became pretty decent friends. When the weekend he was going into the Hall of Fame, he was having some medical problems and he was having a hard time. He needed somebody to help him out. So I called the ambulance or the medics and stuff like that. And we got him from his room to the hospital, and he was able to come out and accept his award. But he was just one of those old time guys, old school guys that, understood entertainment, understood this is showbiz. I mean, it was sports entertainment way back then. He was probably one of the first guys to come out and do it and be like, you know, just to me, you know, some people didn't like him in the business because he had a tendency to color and get outside the lines and tell little fibs and stories here and there. I mean, like, nobody ever done that before. Nobody's ever done that in his business before. You know, but yeah, and he knew how to tell stories and his way of talking. And you know, I've been around him, Mark Lewin, and guys like Gary Hart, and who had this poetic way of talking sometimes, and this this matter and this.
You just gave Jimmy an erection when you said Gary Hart.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, I grew up with Gary Hart too, man. I mean, I grew up watching Gary, and then you know, got to know Gary a little bit too. So I mean, yeah, that was kind of cool. That's how those guys were. I mean, they took it serious, but they were having a blast. I mean, I keep saying that they're having a blast, but that's the only way I can describe it, man, because it's so fun. And that's why I wanted to do this, because there's so all these different characters, and there's not these, you know, straight-laced people with pretty haircuts and suits every day that you see, and you got to sit behind a desk or listen to the crap, you know? So,
obviously,
you start with just that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, obviously he was before my time a bit, but I like really the only clips they kind of show, you know, it's usually him talking or him posing, you know, like kind of like Hogan event, you know, would kind of take off of that a little bit, and Jesse Ventura as well. But I seen a clip the other day of him and Ivan Putski, and the way he sold the Polish hammer was, I mean, it was bumping like Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon in the 90s, man. He flips over, you know, put his feet, go up on the second rope, and he's, you know, convulsing and shit like that. Yeah, I guess that was not a lot of dudes did that in that time, did they?
Well, let me just say this, you know, Putski was a different kind of guy, and his matches were always, he, in fact, I remember Ivan Putski saying Superstar Billy Graham was his favorite opponent. But if you really want to see, to me, the brilliance of Superstar Billy Graham, watch the trilogy with Dusty Rhodes in the Garden. I think they have a regular match, sets up for either a Texas Death Match, and then there's a bull rope match, or it was like a regular match for the title, and that's the match that Cody Rhodes is talking about when he says he took the title from my daddy on in Madison Square Garden. His Dream told me that story. I asked him about it. Dream went out after the match and got the belt, put it around his waist, and put it on, had the referee snap it on for him, or he snapped it on for him. Mm-hmm. The next day in the New York Post, there was a picture of Dusty Rhodes, the new WWF champion. And he was the champion. He said Vince got so hot at him, but he had to bring him back. A Dream and Superstar were like magic, man. If you watch those, just watch how they tell that story and watch how they get into it. They're having a lot. They're having a fun,
Dr. John, is that official PhD's subscription? I mean, prescription? Are you giving me a prescription?
That is a prescription. I would recommend to you take three Dusty Rhodes versus Superstar Billy Graham matches, watch them, and see what it does to your head. Shake your head as hard as you can for 45 seconds flat, and you'll be okay.
Shake
your head for 45 seconds up and down, and then shake it back head side to side for 10 seconds, and you'll be all right. Call me in the morning and let me know how you feel.
Take three of them. Call me in the morning, Dr. John.
Jimmy. Superstar matches.
Jimmy's going to ask you a bunch of fucking serious, non-funny questions. So I'll talk to you here in a minute after you graduate.
Well, that depends. That depends if they're serious or non-funny to me or not. So there you go.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Good luck.
So, I mean, I just got to know this. Trained by the Iron Sheik, tell me about that. I know Wolfie was like, no, we're not going to talk about training, and we're not going to talk about, but that was like one that popped out to me that I had to find out about.
Yeah. I'll tell you how that came about. So, like I said, I started working in the wrestling office in Houston when I was 15 years old, and that alone is a story how that came about. Real quick. You know, my brother got a job selling shoes in Montgomery Ward's one summer. You know, when I just turned 15, I had my learner's permit, which means you could drive a car, you know, to a certain place. I don't remember what the rules were. But anyway, I had my learner's permit, and I could drive the car. And we had an old shitty Dodge car, and I got to drive. But anyway, so he got me this job in Montgomery Ward's, and man, I'm at the wrestling office, which it was a new wrestling office. I'm back up. Me and my brother and Gino Hernandez, a lot of the guys around Houston, helped Paul Bosch move from one office to another. So we had already moved in this new office, bigger, and Paul had all these pictures on his wall. It was just the coolest hell office for a wrestling fan. And I'm in the office after I got this job picking up our tickets. And I'm telling the two ladies who behind the counter about this job, and I said, it's horrible, it's terrible. Just these people come in, they want shoes, they're nasty, and it's like, oh my God. And Paul had walked out of his office and heard what I said, and he came in right behind the two ladies and says, you know, that job is going to give you stories to tell for the rest of your life. How would you like to work here?
Yeah.
Just like that. So anyway, I'm working in the office. He paid me $75 a week. I would have paid him $100 a week to change the work there, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, so I'm working in the office, and Paul knew I wanted to be a wrestler, and he says, you're too small, don't do it, all this other stuff. And I had gotten K&H wrestling boots.
K&H, baby.
Oh, yeah, K&H wrestling boots and K&H wrestling trunks, because I was going to be prepared. I was going to show him.
Yeah.
There was a football player who came down the office. He wanted to wrestle. So Paul said, okay. Gary Hart would always come in Friday morning from Dallas. He would drive in, get to Houston like about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock in the morning. And him and Bronco Lubitsch would go in Paul's office to go over the show for that night. Well, one Friday, you know, the football player showed up. Gary brought the Iron Sheik with him. He was wrestling as Muhammad Farouk at the time.
Okay.
And so it was my job. They come out of the office and Paul says, you know, you need to take these guys to the Coliseum. And if you want to get in there, you can get in there with them too. Oh my God. I always carried my gear with me. I always knew, you know,
yeah.
Good wrestler always carries his gear. Anyway, so we go down to the Coliseum. At this time, I'm sitting by Paul at ringside every Friday night when he's doing the TV. Okay. If you look at some of those old NWA matches from Houston, you'll see me and Paul Bosch sitting to the left of your screen. Mm. Okay. So
yeah.
They never let me in the dressing room. Other than the kayfabe and still. But I'm as close as I get. Now I'm getting to go in the dressing room. I'm going to dress because I'm getting in the ring to, you know, learn how to wrestle from the Iron Sheik, man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this football, Well, this football player comes and me and him go and we go in the dressing room. And I'm looking, I go, huh, it's just one big room. You know, my hunches are right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm getting dressed and I look over and I'm putting on my real pro boots and my pro trunks and got a t-shirt. And I see, Sheiky Baby over there. He's putting on his amateur wrestling shoes. And he's putting on his amateur wrestler singlet. He ain't putting on his daggum pointy toes and camel clutch shit. Well, so we go out there. And we start off with 100 squats and 100 push-ups.
Yeah,
just to warm up, just 100.
Yeah.
Okay. So then he goes down on all knee on his hands and knees to try to turn me over. I couldn't do it. I'm 165.
Yeah.
High school skinny ass shit.
Yeah.
He does the same thing as a football player. Try to turn me over. Okay. Now I do you. So I get on all fours. That son of a bitch. He rolled me over to this day. I don't know what hold it was, but he stretched my neck back and he said, scream. Oh, I said, okay. Go, no, scream louder. And I'm screaming like a bitch.
Oh my God.
And finally, he just kind of pushed me off. He did the same thing to the football player. So then he shows us some amateur stuff and I'm going, shit. But me and the football player kind of roll around a little bit and we do this maybe 2 hours and we go back to the office and Cosmo came the next week too. And he does this for maybe 3 weeks in a row. And the football player finally says, to hell with this shit. He wasn't wearing the phone and shit on TV.
Right.
He never came back. But, but that was my extent of training with the Sheik, you know, like maybe a month.
Yeah.
And, but he taught me that back then they were going to show you, you know.
Yeah.
He stretched me, but he really didn't. He was trying to make a point. He made a point to the football player, but I was bound and determined, man. No matter what they did to me, they're going to have to kill me to get me to quit.
It was a different day then, man. It was a different day.
Yeah. It was a different day, but you know, it's so cool. Just because once you got in, they knew, you know, I was talking to Regal last week at SmackDown and he was saying before the 80s or in the 80s or before, you know, you had to know somebody to get in the business. Now you got wrestling schools and it's a lot different today than it was back then.
Sure. Ain't there a wrestling school in Knoxville somewhere?
Yeah. What is that one?
Well, our wrestling school now is in La Follette.
Okay, that's what I meant.
La Follette's like 45 minutes from Knoxville. We used to be in Knoxville till the first year. But yeah, man, I mean, you can't knock progress, and you can't like go back to the way it was. Everything changes. I mean, every sport, every entertainment part changes.
Yeah.
Movies change, you know, live comedy changes, live shows. So you just got to evolve and you got to accept it.
Let me ask you this, man, because I have this one theory that, like, okay, I'm a fan of, okay, like, say, action movies, and a lot of these guys that, you know, everybody's like, they're not selling nothing, blah, 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 it's too fast, and I do agree with that, and here's what I think they're trying to do, but they're not understanding one simple thing. Okay, so, like, in an action movie, man, I love some of the fight scenes. They're awesome. But they also have the ability to edit, change angles, you know, speed up just in certain times and things like that. A lot of these combinations these dudes are doing are fantastic, but it doesn't come across the same as it does in a movie. And I feel like they're trying to mimic fight scenes instead of a wrestling match. Does that make sense? Do you feel that way?
Well, one of the things, I saw a quote a couple of weeks ago, and I don't remember it exactly, but it was said, you know, guys, more paint doesn't mean a better picture. Right. More lines don't mean better something. More something doesn't mean better this. Same thing with more spots. It's not how much you do, it's how you do what you do. That's why I swear to God, if you go back and watch Dusty Rhodes versus Superstar Billy Graham, those three matches in the Garden they did.
I got my subscription.
good for you. You're watching, man, because they tell a story and they take their time. And we all rush when we start out. Everybody rushes, man. We just don't know.
Yeah.
The only way to get experience is to do it. But you're right. You're doing too much where it looks cool. It's good. But have you ever heard my elephants fucking comparison?
I do not think I have.
Let's hear it.
Well, if you like go to the store and you see two elephants fucking outside, and you go inside, you go, holy shit, there's two elephants fucking outside, holy shit. Well, if you go the next day and you see those same two elephants fucking, you go in and go, holy shit, there's two elephants out there fucking still. By the third day, if they're still out there, it's like, oh, there's those fucking elephants.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've seen it, and it's cool the first maybe two times you see it, or it's different, or it's odd, or it's, you know, I like odd stuff. But, you know, you have to have flash. Jimmy Snuka, when he did the dive, I remember in the 70s, everybody said, oh my God, that's the greatest thing. Yeah. Well, then you had to escalate it, and you had to go higher and higher and higher, and you had to do different stuff. Not against that, and it can work, but give people time to digest it and see it and tell a story. A story is still a story, and people, that's the idea in movies, comedy, wrestling, everything.
Right.
Yeah.
100%.
You know, baseball just speeded up the sport. I think somebody's telling me you got like 8 seconds to be out of the batter's box or something like that. And so instead of a 4-hour game, you got a 2.5-hour game. So for good, bad, or indifferent, I mean, they realized baseball was going too slow. They either moved the fences in or moved them back. People want to see home runs. They want to see action. Yes, they do want to see action. At the same time, they need to be able to digest it. And in wrestling, we have the ability to do whatever you want to do. Whatever it is you want to do, man, you can do it as long as it's done well. And again, just because you put more paint on it, don't make it a better picture.
Yeah.
You know, everything you do has got to mean something, and even the smallest things. And there is a part to speed up. There is a part to slow down. There is a part where you take your time and use your facial expressions, man, because that's what we've got to make this thing work. Expressions, body language, you know, slow down, slow down, slow down. But people take that by saying, oh, you can't do cool stuff. No, you can do cool stuff at the right time in the right place.
Right.
Yeah.
Hey,
what do you think, man? Because, like, you know, I trained some people. I had a little school for a minute, and I feel like I was very good at teaching people and relaying it. And because, like, you could be one of the best wrestlers, you know, in the world, not be good at teaching it. So with you, you've been, you know, obviously super successful with the turning out some superstars and stuff. What do you think's made you so successful just as a trainer?
I think the people that came, and I think the people that are trained, it's all up to them. It's all up to them to be able to do it. I don't think you can have a guy who was great. I agree 100%, but it's trying to get the message across. And as you well know, I have a different way of delivering a message. And yeah. I don't always get across to people, and I'm a different kind of guy. One of my favorite people in the world is a horrible, horrible. He's a great performer, but he's David Lee Roth was the ultimate rock star. David Lee Roth knew how to control a crowd within the palm of his hand, man. Couldn't sing a lick. It didn't matter to me. I like the vaudeville, man. I like the carny. I love the fact that people are going out there and telling a story in that simple way. And then, you know, it's like the old school carny magician pull the quarter out of your ear. Yeah. See, I just love simple shit like that because it tells the story and it gets it across. Now put it on the big stage. Instead of pulling the quarter out of the ear, you know, you're going to bring a tractor down to ringside and destroy the ring. Okay, I get it. That's what you do for the main event, and you do all that stuff. But if you don't know how to sell it, if you don't know how to react to it, that's kind of where I go. I go with the details. I go with a little movement of the hand, a movement of the foot. Right. It's the little shit that adds up to the big shit. Some people get it. Some people don't. I've just been real fortunate to have some people come who had some talent. You got to have talent for this too. You got to have a feel for this. You got to have an innate ability when you get in the ring to have to be able to convey what's going on and everybody watching you. If people come to pay to see you for the first time, how are you going to tell them that you're this amethyst rock star? What the hell is an amethyst rock star? A guy actually told me that. And I said, what is an amethyst rock star? Well, he's a guy who doesn't care about anything. You know, he's not afraid. I said, okay. I know you're telling me that, but how do I know that when I see you walk from the dressing room to the ring? Mm-hmm. What can I tell you? Wahoo McDaniel was an Indian. If you didn't know that, if you looked at the feathers he wore to the ring, you could tell he was an Indian. Stan Hansen was a cowboy because he wore a cowboy hat. We're being real simplistic here, but it's really as simple as that. Roman Reigns is the head of the table because he comes out and he tells you that, you know, respect me, acknowledge me, all these things, but he does it with his body language as well. You look at that guy and you know he's a star.
Yeah. Right.
So that's what it is. You've got to have that mindset. You've got to have confidence. You've got to believe, and you've got to be authentic too. Without authenticity, people are going to see right through you, man. You and Jamie were freaking PG-13. Uh-huh. When you came to the matches, you knew you guys were some hubcap carrying hoods.
It's so funny, man, that you say that, because we, in the past few weeks, that's come up to where Jimmy Hart said that to me and Jamie just about a month or two ago when he saw us. He said, I tell everybody, it's like, it wasn't a gimmick, it's them. And like Jerry Jarrett said the same thing on an interview that we showed. And it's funny, man, because that's the truth.
Authenticity. Without the authenticity, people can see right through you. When I see a band, hey, man, I've seen Aerosmith three times. They're awesome. But I'm just getting into going down a rabbit hole and watching The Who perform live.
Yeah.
These guys were putting on a show and they were playing music, yes, but I came for the show.
Right.
And it's the same thing wrestling. I can see good wrestling. I get all that. Yes, give me the good wrestling. But then I want to see the show.
Right.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Let's take a quick time out and get a word from one of my dope-ass sponsors, and we'll be right back with more Live and in Color with Wolfie D.
Support for Live and in Color with Wolfie D is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped recently launched the Ultimate Men's Hygiene Bundle, the Performance Package. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code WOLFIE at manscaped.com. If my math's correct, that's about 8 million balls.
Hey folks, this is Wolfie D here, and if you are looking to buy or sell a home in Tennessee or Southern Kentucky, you're going to want to call my buddy, the rock star realtor, Benji Bowie. And you say, Wolfie, how do I get in touch with this rock star? Well, you can call him directly at 615-390-8216. You can go to his website, BowieHomes.com, that's B-U-I-E, homes.com, or you can email him at BenBowie34@gmail.com. When you need a home, you need the Rockstar Realtor.
Benji is a member of Exit Realty's Garden Gate team in Gallatin, Tennessee.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
So I'm going to put myself out on a limb here. And you just brought up Jamie and I. So you worked an angle with this. You probably had, you know, heard of us from Memphis before we actually met and stuff like that. Give as the trainer of the stars, give PG-13 a grade.
Oh, no, you guys are great.
Well,
honest to God.
I mean, I just kind of, you know, in a trainer's type of way, what would you see in us? What did you see?
You would be the example I would use as authenticity. You would be the guys that came out that everybody knew Jamie wasn't playing a part. You weren't playing a part. You guys were those guys, and you guys were those guys,
yeah.
And you guys are those guys. So that's the grade I would give you is authenticity. Mm-hmm. 10 examples. 10. Mm-hmm. That's how can I say this? You guys were like Memphis had teams, Memphis had singles, all this other stuff. So you knew if you were figured in and if you weren't. In
right.
Memphis, you guys were figured in because there was no other way. You
right.
had to be figured in.
Yeah.
You guys
yeah.
were two punks, came out there, but when you got in the ring, you guys fought and you did shit and people knew that was you. You couldn't just put that gimmick on somebody. Yet there's nobody that could wear it except you guys.
Right. And John Cena. But
well, no, John was a different guy. John was a different, he wasn't PG-13. He was trying to be a rapper and a thug. Once you found hustle, loyalty, respect, that's John. And that's John and Harvey. I mean,
yeah.
In a nutshell.
I say it lovingly.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
So, okay. Go ahead. Did you say?
No, you go. No.
Okay,
you,
cool. All right.
No, May? You go. No, I want to go. No, you go.
I want to go.
Sorry.
Can we all go? All right. Okay, so we're bouncing around.
Sorry.
All right. May 2nd, 1993, a small town called Council, Virginia.
I remember like it was yesterday.
I saw you and Stan work the Rock and Roll Express in person because that little town was near where I grew up. And I tell you, I at that point, I had been a Rock and Roll Express fan all my life. Reason I started loving wrestling. But I started to notice the elements of what a heel tag team could offer to a burgeoning teenager, I guess. The anti-authority element, but also, you know, protect yourself at all costs. Tell me, how was it working the Rock and Roll Express?
Oh, man. I give Ricky Morton credit all the time. He's one of the greatest baby faces of all time. Robert Gibson, he knew his role in that team too. And together, those guys were incredible. They were certainly, yeah, for not ever really being a WWE tag team and being indicted, as Jimmy was saying, inducted in the Hall of Fame. You know, they were incredible. They were every night. They were so smooth. They understood how to work. They understood how to get heat. They understood timing. And that was more than a pleasure. That was a vacation, man.
And you guys seem to fill in. I mean, you know, we knew the classic Midnight Express rock and roll feud, but it felt like you guys basically tagged in. The Midnight's tagged out and you tagged in, obviously Stan being the connective tissue there. But it felt like you guys had been wrestling them as long as the Midnight's had. It just seems so seamless. And I'm sure you've heard that before. You know, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, it was supposed to be Midnight Rock and Roll, and Bobby just got a contract extension. So I was next in line, you know, and I was in Memphis at the time, and Jimmy called, he was going to start this up, and he said, asked if I'd like to be in a team with Stan. Well, of course, man, they'd already pioneered and they'd already been there, done that.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, it was exactly designed that way. And Jimmy the Heavenly Bodies instead of the Midnight Express, but it was the same deal. I mean, it was the same guys, really. And I was just happy to be riding their coattails, man. It was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome. You know, I remember people, you know, booing the hell out of you in that little town. Talk about that. Those little bitty towns. Talk about how, because, I mean, it was a high school gymnasium, but I guarantee there was 800 people in there, and that was packed to the gills. Talk about those small little towns and how you had fun there.
See, I grew up in Texas and in, you know, West Texas, and then I went to East Texas. And it was the same attitude I found. And a lot of the guys who worked Tennessee, like the Infernos, J.C. Dykes, and the Von Bronners and Saul Weingroff.
Oh, yeah.
Those were way before your time. But they came through when I was watching. Those are the guys that made me fall in love with wrestling and the Funks and all this other stuff. So, I knew, and going into these small towns, I'm still here, man. And I'm in Knoxville now. And these people around here, when they go to wrestle matches, even though they know or think they know or have been told, they still get into it because they understand good wrestling and good action and good working. So that was so cool, because you get a small town crowd like that, and you get somebody who wanted to be part of the show, you know, subconsciously or even consciously, and mess with the heels. And we were going to give it to them. Jimmy was going to give it to them. And that was when the fun really came.
Absolutely.
Came over, man, because there's nothing better than working in front of a hot crowd, and they're booing the heels, cheering the baby faces, doing what they're supposed to do, and you have your smart ass in there that the heel can point out, and then he can be the hometown hero when the heel loses or the baby face goes over and puts him over and stuff like that. That to me is still the most fun, to go watch stuff like that and see stuff like that.
They're popping for a headlock.
And you still, once again, these days you do have to have the glitz, glamour, and the sizzle with it. But, you know, you got to give them something to get excited about.
Oh, yeah, man. My opinion on, I love those little towns. Like, almost than the nowadays crowd. I mean, that's just,
yeah.
That's, we cut up together in there and made people mad as they could be, you know, ready to hit the ring. And sometimes they actually hit the ring, and, you know, that shit was fun, man.
Yeah.
It was fun too, because you could call it on the fly, and everybody back then, everybody could do that. And like you say, cut up and have fun in the ring. And man, what a night off. You travel to the town, you know, in the cars, having a good time. Then go in the dressing room, have a good time, and go out to the ring, have a good time, get in the car, go back to wherever you're going, next town, or go home, have a good time. I mean, what a life, man.
Yeah, exactly. Every day was a good time. Do stuff to
change. Damn right.
all day, every day.
Yeah.
So, okay, all right, I'm finding an opening here. And this has kind of become a patented question of mine that I like to try to get in during, you know, especially with your guys' history. First meeting PG-13, what were your thoughts?
Well, these are loudmouth punks. You know what I mean? But here's the deal. You know, you need those kind of guys. You need guys like that because – they're good for the locker room. As crazy and insane as you and Jamie could be, you need those, man. Because no, seriously, that was the locker rooms back then.
Yeah,
and if you didn't know how to fit in there, you didn't fit in.
Exactly.
So you guys, but I saw it, and you weren't playing a part. You know, you were the part, and that. That's not easy to, well, it is easy to find. They just don't always know how to cultivate it.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought. You guys, but you guys were insane. I knew Jamie was insane. I didn't know how insane you were yet.
But over the years, man, Tom, you've been look up to, and just want to tell you thank you for that, and being cool, and just and being a friend, man. And if you want me to edit this out, I will, but I would like to tell the people what kind of dude you are. Is that there was a time when I lived in Knoxville that I wasn't doing too well, man, and I needed to go to a meeting, an AA meeting, and I really didn't know too many places around there, and I was talking to Tom, and Tom didn't need to go, okay, but I did, and Tom went with me, and that to me speaks volumes of the character of Dr. John Richards.
Well, hey, man, let me tell you this. We all need to go somewhere sometime or another. None of us perfect, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, none of us perfect, and we all need a hand reached out to us, and there have been a few people who have done that for me. But it's just like, you know, especially as time goes on and I get older, I realize, and that you hear it your whole life as you're going through this journey, but you just can't accept it because you're not there yet. You don't know where you're at. I mean, you're still staying in a Red Roof Inn going, God almighty damn, man, when am I going to leave here? And then 2 weeks later, you're going, holy shit, I haven't left yet. You know, so and you need somebody to bump you off your ass, or you, everybody needs somebody to at least tell you, hey, the world's still spinning and you're still here, so don't worry about it. It'll take care of itself.
Yeah.
And that's I think that goes for everybody. Nobody's that unique to where they can handle it all by themselves.
Yeah. Absolutely. Being Mental Health Awareness Month, this fits perfectly, and I did not do that on purpose. I don't plan it. Jimmy, and we always jokingly say on this show that I call it in the ring, and he writes everything down that he wants to ask.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, okay, well, I've got a couple more questions here, and really, you know, one of them I've learned through this episode that I can ask now, and then the other one might put you on the hot seat a little bit, but okay.
Okay, stop right there. You can ask me anything you want. I don't mind being on the hot seat at all.
Okay, well then, okay. All right, so.
Then he's got 10 more questions.
Okay, no, that's cool, dude. I got to be somewhere at one, that's all.
No, I promise it won't be that.
No, you're good.
As far back as in California with Chris Adams, of course, Stan Lane, Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey, and then, of course, you know, the late Gigolo Jimmy Del Rey, and then, of course, the late Chris Candido. And, of course, there's probably several more, but if you had to say it, who would you say the tag team partner that you clicked with the most in the ring?
Man, I don't know if there was just one that I clicked with the most. Chris and I were doing something that was so foreign to us. That wasn't us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We were that was playing a part, and that sucked. The body kind of sucked. And we knew it, dude. It was horrible. We hated every minute. I hated every minute, let me say that. But I love Chris Candido, and we could do things in the ring. I clicked with Chris, you know, when I worked with him. But I think, you know, both Stan and Jimmy were two different guys.
Totally.
Different guys. But we clicked together well. And I think I clicked with Stan because I understood my role, and I understood what he was going to do, and I knew where I was going to be placed. So that worked. But I don't know if there's any one that I could say clicked. I mean, we all kind of clicked in the ring. Sure. It was outside the ring where sometimes I said, Jimmy, I got to go this way and I'll meet up with you tomorrow. You know, and I'll say this real quick too, you know, Jimmy and I were different in ways, but God almighty, we'd get in the ring and we'd have these really great matches, but then we'd go out and I went out with Jimmy just, I think twice. And that was because when we walked in, when I walk in someplace, I like to kind of lay low and see what the lay of the land is and the environment I'm in, you know, and just kind of chill first. And Jimmy was going to go, hey, we just got done wrestling Steiners. Guess what? Oh, no, please. God, no. You know what I mean? I just want to ease in there a little bit and look at that over there. Look at
that's
that
funny,
over here.
Too, man. Like, especially, you know, in the later 90s before we really split up the first time. That's how me and Jamie was, man. And still to this day, like, we like each other, I guess, sort of. And like, but when we got in the ring and when we get together, even just doing signings and stuff, we feed off each other. We make the people laugh. And, you know, in the ring, same, you know, the chemistry was incredible. But outside, it just was like, God, and I can't tolerate him that much anymore. And
But you know what? And I'll just say this too. And, I'll move on, but if you're going to be a team, you got to be a team in and out of the ring, man. If you're going to be successful, you really do.
Absolutely.
I mean, because if you think about it, you know, like Bobby and Dennis, and then it was Bobby and Stan, and it was two totally different teams, but it worked so good and it was seamless. Yeah. And it was just like the bodies too, Tom and Stan, and then Jimmy and Tom. It was so amazing, but it was so different. And honestly, I mean, it was funny because, you know, Stan was kind of known for the hip gyrations, and then you have Jimmy's crazier hip gyrations that were so much more animated, but absolutely amazing and hilarious at the same time. It was so amazing to see just the quality of heel tag team. I'm an absolute Midnight Express mark, but I am absolutely a Heavenly Bodies mark as well. And I've just so enjoyed both tag teams. So I don't know. I just kind of wanted to throw that point in there. I'm really not. So the other one is, can you give me something, maybe just a funny or interesting story? Because now I know I can ask it a little something about my favorite manager of all time, Gary Hart.
Oh man. I used to take Gary to the airport after the show.
Yeah.
And I don't have anything funny or interesting about him, but he would talk in, you know, I know a boy like you doesn't do things like this. And he'd take his cigarettes out of his pocket and he'd find that one special cigarette. I know a boy like you would never do anything like this. Would you like to try this? And I'm like, okay, maybe. Yes, sir. I would. I wasn't going to say no.
Right.
You know, but that was, you know, Gary and Mark Lewin and those guys were a different kind of breed, man. Gary has some heat with people because of the way he did business, you know, and he wasn't always the most pleasant guy to deal with. I've heard that through the years, but I had nothing but pleasant memories of him. I really don't, but nothing that really stands out where we went out and to a bar and pushed a guy down the stairs or anything like that.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Although people that were around Gary, would mention things like that.
Yeah. You know? Thank you.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So one of the like saddest times, I guess, in my career, man, was when Smoky Mountain shut down, honestly, because if you recall, man, you guys, the Smoky Mountain crew, Rock and Roll, Tracy, Terry Gordy, Buddy Landell, can't remember if I'm missing anybody. And then you guys.
The Armstrongs, man.
The Armstrongs are great.
The Armstrongs, yeah. And, you know, y'all helped us pop the Memphis territory. And I so bad was waiting on when we did the invasion of the Smoky Mountain territory to do the opposite there and make it a turf war type thing or a territory war. I just felt like, man, that would have, Do you think that could have kept Smoky Mountain in business? Because, I mean, you remember, man, the houses in Memphis were down and they rose in every town dramatically. Do you think it would have helped them?
Not really, because the business was changing and everybody wanted to see the stars on TV. I mean, it was really ramping up. And, you know, if you were doing a territory every week, it kind of got to be to where we were doing high school gyms and they were doing auditoriums and then, big buildings and stuff. And then just the aesthetics of it, the optics looked totally different and made us look like really Bush League. Even though we had the talent and Jimmy Cornette was major league and there's some major league talent been there, done that, you know, and we had for the southern part of the country, I mean, it was a good old southern territory, but times were changing. Yeah. And that's like I was saying earlier, you know, everything changes from entertainment to sports and people just had a perception of it. And I don't know that it was enough. When we started, when we did the deal with WCW, that was originally going to be something to where you could exchange talent back and forth and kind of help. But it's just the day and time. It was it wouldn't work.
Yeah. I guess it was just the Memphis territory, man, was different, man, and held on, you know, the longest, and that's cool. I just, man, I really like Smoky Mountain, and I loved coming over there, you know, going to Knoxville from and representing Memphis. That was always worked good when we worked Tony and Tracy. And then did we ever end up – I know we did the promo to set up for it, but did we ever end up working you guys there? I can't remember.
Well, I don't know if it's Smoky Mountain. I know we worked in Memphis side of it.
Oh yeah, we did a little bit of an angle there, but I can't remember. I know we set up.
I don't know
because y'all dressed up and we got color.
Yeah. I don't know if we did Smoky Mountain side or not.
Yeah. We're so good to me because I was Jim Crockett. I grew up in the Mid-Atlantic area, and obviously Jim Crockett goes away, turns into WCW, becomes kind of a flashier but a southern version of WWE. But when it came down to it, then I would be finding the Memphis tapes, the USWA tapes, but at the same time, Smoky Mountain came in, and that replaced what I needed as far as the wrestling that I enjoyed. And, you know, to me, I would have loved to have seen what Smoky Mountain and maybe even a possible USWA feud would have had. I would have loved to have seen more of that in the territory that I got to watch more. So, but I understand that's a great point. I definitely see it, but I don't know. I kind of feel like it could have extended it just because, I mean, did you notice a decline in the shows near the end of Smoky Mountain, Tom?
Yeah, we did because we were there all the time.
Right.
So, and Jimmy was, getting funded by Rick Rubin. And I think Rick had probably said, you know, guys, I love you, but I've lost enough.
Yeah. That makes sense. Okay, well, I'm going to kind of pivot here because I just, you know, I was doing some research about you there, and you at one time were a Blue Blazer alternate. Did you have fun with that? Did you try to work a little bit of Owen's style at all? How did you go about?
No, all I did was a couple times come out when Owen had to be seen, you know, like to prove he wasn't a Blue Blazer. So I took a couple bumps, but that wouldn't, no. I didn't try to work on style at all. It wasn't that long.
Right.
It wasn't that long of a deal when it came out. It's just Blackman would suplex me or somebody else would start a match. We'd start a match or do something. But no, I never really looked that far into it. I just kind of wore the mask and knew, because that was what it was. Everybody was knowing it wasn't Owen.
Yeah.
But so I never really put that much thought into it.
That makes sense, though. I mean,
Well, Dr. John, I want you to take this moment to plug anything that you need to plug with the people. We're coming up on an hour, and I don't really like keeping them here no longer than that. So
he has a great podcast. He does. I love his podcast.
So go ahead.
I tell you what, we got all things JPWA. If anybody wants to check it out, it's our website is jpwrestlingacademy.com. And it'll tell you all about our school. It'll tell you all about training. I got a book out just about. Oh, you got the book? It's not a book. It's a curriculum kind of deal, and it's, you know, just to tell you how, if you want to train this way or suggestions to do something and all things like that. So if you go to jpwrestlingacademy.com, you can find out all about it, all about the book. Find out all about our training. We train 5 days a week, man. I'm there 7 hours a day. We do advanced class 3 to 6, and then we do beginner 6 to 10. So that's 7 hours a day, man. Except Wednesday, we do promos for 2 hours. But Monday, yeah. Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, we're in the ring. And I'm having a blast. We're now in La Follette, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
In the SPCW Sportatorium, they've been gracious enough when we had to leave our first place to let us come in and start training there. So that's about it, man. That's what we got going on.
How is Glenn doing, Big Kane?
He's doing great, man. He's in his second term as mayor for Knox County, and he's doing really good.
Is that a 2-term limit, I assume?
I believe it is, yeah, and this is second term, so he's got to find something else to do once he's out of there.
Kane for president, and Dr. John vice president.
I don't think so. I don't want any part of that either. But no, I think Glenn's definitely looking at something else. And
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Always liked him, man. All right, dude. Well, we're going to let you get going to what you got to do. Get your teethies cleaned. And thank you so much, Tom, for coming on. I'm sorry it took this long, and I don't know why, but it has. But
well, yes, you wouldn't have me on, man. It's because I kept sending messages every day, and you wouldn't tell me. I said, hey, Wolfie, put me on your podcast, and you wouldn't do it. So,
Wolfie,
I'm glad my mom finally wrote a note and got on.
I love you, dude. Well, man.
Thanks for having me, guys. I love you too. I appreciate it. And anytime I can get on here, I'd love to.
Thank you, sir.
Take it easy.
Got it, man.
Bye. All right. And we'll be right back with Ask Wolfie Anything. DJ, hit the music. Ask Wolfie Anything. All right, we are back with a little bit of that Ask Wolfie D Anything. And today, you know, we had an excellent show with Dr. Tom Pritchard. What a great guy. Always really enjoyed that guy's work, especially back in the day. I got to see him wrestle in 93. I pinpointed the time down to a time in a small town where I was from, near Lebanon, Virginia, a little town called Council, Virginia. Shout out Ben Martin. You know what I'm talking about. And we do have, you know, those people just like the small towns in Arkansas, the small towns in Tennessee, the small towns in Mississippi, all love pro wrestling. They leave their troubles at the door, and as they walk through the door, they fully believe everything. And I love it. And those towns are so good for wrestling. And, you know, I just wish there was more towns like, you know, those towns. So anyway, speaking of towns, I imagine some of these questions.
Do you remember that time in...
Go ahead. No. I'm saying we normally do get a lot of those questions of like, tell me about Jackson, Tennessee and the time. Anyway, we don't really have a lot of those questions today. So, yes. So, but these are some good questions. Now, the first one is from Cause Effect on Instagram. Now, he clearly listened to the last episode. Okay. This is cool. This is a cool question. I've never really heard you answer this. So, our most recent episode, we had Drake Wirtz Younger on the show. Obviously, great episode. Thank y'all so much for listening to that. Numbers are doing awesome. We greatly appreciate it, as always. So Drake was not only a great wrestler, a deathmatch wrestler, but also he turned into an awesome referee that had a good amount of success there. Now, he tells the story in this show because you asked him about it. He tells the story about, you know, William Regal having a heart-to-heart with him and saying, hey, look, you might get a few years as a wrestler, but if you wanted to do a referee, you know, you could really get a good career out of that. And, you know, he did. He got 7 years with him. And, you know, things that he did, WrestleMania, you know, I mean, he got to ref WrestleMania. So that being said, let's just pretend, okay, that the same situation happened to you. Let's pretend you're in your slash run, okay? And JR's like, hey, Wolfie, we're looking at you. And let's pretend like you don't beat your head until you bleed on TV and you get in trouble with Cornette or whatever. Let's pretend you make it to their whatever such situation and somebody has that heart-to-heart with you and says, hey, Wolfie, would you consider being a referee? What would you do, and what do you think you would have done?
Well, personally, to me, that would mean, in my situation, I would have had to have got off the gas, stopped working out, because I think I would be too big for a referee.
Yeah.
I mean, really, 6'1", and, you know, at 240, you know. Is pretty big for a referee in the WWE. So I'm not so sure that would have came to me, but let's just say my stature was smaller and it did come to me. I mean, hell yeah, man. That's why not? You still get to be a part of it, a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And you got to wrestle a little bit, and somebody that is trying to give you some good advice on your future, you know, not just looking to tomorrow, gives you that advice like him, you know, I would have done it.
Yeah.
Like I said, but I didn't think that would ever come to me.
Right. Right. Of course, you were a little swole and you're pretty tall. So, I mean,
I wanted to stop working out. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I really would have done that if that would have been my situation.
Right. Right. So, yeah, that's
and you got fat. and they definitely fat referee out there.
Yeah, nobody wants that. I mean, we've seen a million fat referees. So, you know, and maybe that's something that our listeners, let's say you're in your 20s or 30s. I know a lot of our listeners are not, but let's just say this. Let's say you don't have the microphone charisma, right? And let's say you're not majorly athletically gifted. Let's say you can get around, but you're not majorly athletically gifted, you know, referee, but you still want to be in the business and you want to try to do something and you got a pretty good head on your shoulders. The referee is actually a good way. And you know, I was actually, before I started, I was totally not into that idea. I didn't understand how important they were to the system. Yeah. I was like, I won't be a manager. I can talk. I won't be a manager, you know, and I wouldn't hear it. But my mentor, Kenny, he was like, dude, you need to be a ref. Let's train you to be a ref. You'd be great as a ref. Even though I was tall, I was really skinny. So, you know, I'm 6'1", 6'2", whatever, but I was pretty skinny guy. So I didn't really, I guess, it wouldn't have looked too crazy for me to be a referee. But that being said, you know, I was headstrong and wanted to be a manager, so that's where we went. But with that being said, if you don't have the microphone charisma, if you don't have the athletic ability, maybe the referee would be a way that you all could be involved in wrestling. So find a really reputable training school, like Dr. Tom's would be amazing. Ricky Morton, you know, I don't want to say there's a million of them because there's not a million good ones, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, wouldn't you agree that may be a way that somebody could be involved?
Yeah, for sure. 100%. 100%. Managing, refereeing, many guys have gotten in that way, especially the refereeing part. Usually once you stay a manager, but, I mean, not necessarily, but, you know.
Right, right, exactly.
But, yeah, I think 6'1 still for a referee is 6'1", 6'2 is still too tall for a referee.
Yeah.
Because I like the
5'9"
of the theory of the smaller referee.
I agree. But as Drake said, need to look.
You got a big ass head, so you might look funny. Skinny, 6'1", that big ass head you got.
That is so true. So true. Oh man, you got me pegged, brother. Anyway, okay, all right. Well, I liked your answer, though. I know I went off on a tangent there to try to help the listeners, but I liked your answer. Obviously, in a different scenario, maybe a different body frame, you would have obviously accepted that job. No, that's kind of what I was getting at. So anyway, the next question is from a great listener. We've actually, and all y'all are great. What am I saying? But this guy is actually very active with us on socials. He's very interested in watching more PG-13 matches, which makes him a perfect listener. So that being said, Freshie Johnson on Facebook, actually we message back and forth quite a bit. He asked an interesting question that I think I did ask you back in one episode, but he just a refresher for maybe some of the new listeners. How did Frog join PG-13? Like, I guess let's get down to the details on this, because the deal was you guys were working as kind of, you know, carpenter tag team in WCW. Yeah. You guys were getting some time working in WCW, and there was a lot of trios there, right?
Yeah.
Like the Young Dragons and Three Count and all that. So PG-13 comes in to be able to work more of those guys. They added Frog. Now, I guess tell me, how did you meet Frog? How was that place to you?
That was just, hey, show up one day and met the guy, and he's going to be with, it wasn't necessarily, hey, y'all are a group now, but you know what I mean? He did end up being with us, and then hell, I brought him into Nashville to work as my partner a few times, or at least once I know, and then he ran a show one time out in Kill Devil Hills, what is that, North Carolina?
Yeah, that's it. That's my neck of the woods.
Yeah, and so he ran a show out there and had me and Jamie on it. We went out there and we liked him, and he clicked with us, you know, with the look somewhat. And then, you know, he worked great. I loved his work, man. And I think he was buddies with the North Carolina crew, like I think the Hardys, and I know Shane Helms and some of those guys, man.
So Shannon Moore, And then
some bitch just disappeared, man. I've asked about him 100 times, and I feel like nobody knows where he is, if he's still alive. I hope so, but I don't know, man. I don't know what happened.
Frog.
But kind of a thrown together, man, is the answer.
Got it. So it wasn't really something that you had a choice in the matter, really.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, you know, hey, let's bring in Chris Kern, Lucky 13, whatever. You didn't get that opportunity. It was like, here's Frog. He's with y'all. So,
yeah.
And hey, good for him. You know, Frog, where are you, brother? We'd love to have you on the show sometime, you know.
If anybody has any contact on him, email us.
Yeah, email us, liveandincolor.wolfied@gmail.com, or message us on any of our social medias. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Well, the last one of the day, and I've enjoyed this question. I don't think you will enjoy this question. You because it may bring up bad thoughts, but it's a good question, is what I mean. Is the worst injury you ever had in wrestling?
So it's either going to be like in the ring stuff, where it's either going to be when I tore my tricep.
Yeah.
There was a time, I think I've told it, where I went, it was an indie show, probably late 90s in Chicago, and I went to powerbomb the dude. The ring mat was, the canvas was loose. And also, his timing for a powerbomb was off. It wasn't correct. He went, when I lift him, he went into a pile driver, and instead of, you know, coming on up all in one motion, it was like, pile driver, now I'll sit up for you. And it threw me off and threw my balance off. So then when I went to sit out on that loose mat, my right ankle got stuck, or my right foot got stuck, the whole foot. And so I did a power bomb in a hurdler's position with his body landing on the leg that was behind me. And it, like, man, it just, all the ligaments from my foot up to my knee on the inside were just fucked. I mean, and then the finish of the match was that they get me in a figure four and I don't give up. And then the manager comes in and breaks a pool stick over our legs. So I ended up finishing it, but man, I limped all the way. I think I've told this story of limping through the airport and all that stuff, man. And
Yeah, it was bad. My foot was in a cast for a long time. And I think, I don't know if we watched it on here, but there's a match where it was a shoot, man. My foot was in a cast. And it was like a Christmas or Thanksgiving show for Bert and Ashel. And I was on crutches. It was like, I think it was a bull rope, a dog collar match with Flash. And I worked it one-footed. I worked it.
Wow. Yeah, that I've seen that match actually recently. Yeah. Brian Hardison, Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Check them out on YouTube. Because you've already subscribed to our YouTube, then go and subscribe to Brian Turner's as well. Great show, has a ton of old Wolfie matches on there, but you know, some great stuff. He's adding more every day. We love Brian on this show, and gotta go support the homies. But yes, you can see the one-legged Wolfie match that he's bouncing around, and it's actually pretty impressive. So yeah.
For a one-legged dude, it wasn't a bad match.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's, you know,
a shoot one-legged dude.
A shoot. Yeah, well, what also is a shoot is we're done for the day, brother.
We are done for the day.
Yes. Dr. Tom wrote us a prescription. Now we got to go get him filled, y'all. So.
He wrote us a subscription.
Yes.
Dr. John wrote me a subscription for 3 matches a day and call him tomorrow.
Yes, yes. It's a subscription to Peacock or the network or whatever. Anyway, well, wrap us up, man. Brother.
Yeah, let's take it on to his house, man. Thanks again for joining us. And next week, hopefully, we'll have another topic for you. Maybe a guest. Who knows? We ain't had a good topic in a while, so we may do that. May or may not. You'll have to tune in and listen to Live and in Color with Wolfie D. Jimmy Street. See you next week.
And now a word from our sponsor.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Give Me Back My Pro Wrestling, the podcast that's based on the old school but can still help you find the good stuff from today. Jimmy Street and the Plastic Sheik, Jared, are the undisputed tag team champions of the wrestling podcast world. From thought-provoking topics to superstar interviews to action figure expertise, this team does it all. And all they ask is, give me back my pro wrestling! Every other Thursday, wherever you listen to podcasts.
That's right, it's the talk of Middle Tennessee, the channel you love to hate and the channel you hate to love. It's Brian Turner from Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. And if you're looking for matches from Wolfie D to Jerry Lawler to Dusty Rhodes and the team that put a pimp before your eyes and a goatee between your thighs, Boudicca and Athena, go to LostWrestling.com. See, I made it easy for you. Brian Turner's VHS Rehab. Booyah!
Hey everyone, this is Shane from Insane Shane's World. I release wrestling figures of enhancement talent, mid-card wrestlers, and wrestlers that you never thought would have a figure available. So if you are interested in adding a really cool and rare figure to your collection, then don't hesitate to contact me at shamtheman73@gmail.com. That's shamtheman73@gmail.com. You can also join my Facebook group. Just search Insane Shane's World.
If you're a fan of rock music, I'd really appreciate it if you took a moment to check out my podcast. It's called the Decibel Geek Podcast. We've been doing it for about 10 years now. We talk about Kiss. We talk about Ozzy. We talk about Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and Metallica. We talk about all the legends from the 60s and on up to brand new bands that you should be hearing about today that you're not going to hear on the radio. It's Decibel Geek. Wherever you find your podcasts, you'll find us there. If you love rock and roll, I can almost guarantee you're going to love my show.
So that was another great episode. Hey, Wolfie, tell them where they can find you on social media.
Jimmy, they can find me in the club, bottle full of bub. I'm just kidding. They can find me on Facebook. My personal page is Warren Wolf, W-O-L-F-E. I'm on Instagram, at WarrenWolf13.
You can always find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, at LiveWolfieD. Here's the thing. Wolfie always has offers for his autographed photos. He has a selection of some awesome photos from throughout his career that he will autograph and personalize any way that you want him to. Just contact him either directly at his personal Facebook page or through any one of our other pages, and we'll make sure you get in contact directly with Wolfie. Get those photos, right, Wolfie?
Yeah, I've got some good stuff on there, you know, to help with the podcast.
Folks, if you can't get out to a show to meet Wolfie D, there's nothing like that, especially for the fans of PG-13 and Wolfie D. And before we go, you can always find me, your host, Jimmy Street, at James Rock Street on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube.
And hey, Jimmy, before we go real quick, I just want to add in there, from the bottom of my heart, I really appreciate, first of all, the work you've done for this podcast. You have worked your butt off. Secondly, the people that are liking the page. Beyond that, even more, is the people that are listening, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, and remember, guys, the podcast drops a new episode every Monday at noon, and our past episodes are streaming now on demand on all major podcast formats. Thanks again.
I got a cat for your dog.
He got a cat for your dog.
I got a cat for your dog.
He got a cat for your dog.
You don't. And here we go. The original white boy that came out sagging, not bragging, don't be hating, cause I'm spitting the truth. Still living in color. Blum rush your mother. Utilize a hubcap. I'm like any other. Back in the day, I was N-O-D, and I was P to the G, plus the 1 and the 3. In case you forgot, they call me Wolfie D. Been cloned and copied so many times. Tired of suckers taking credit for what is mine. You know who you are without me name dropping. Wrestling's first white boy coming out hip-hop. Been doing it like this since 92. Laid low for a while when you thought I was through. Listen real close to these rhymes that I've injected. This shit's so sick it makes your ears get infected. Mad skills, no faking, there is no one great. Cause I'm bringing more folks than Obi-Wan or Vader. Not here to play games, so you better beware. You don't like me, so what?
I really don't care.
Like time I keep ticking and I can't be stopped. You suck a step to the side unless you wanna get dropped. When I finish, I'll straight knock you out. Please allow me to tell you what it's all about. I'm gonna wind it up, then I'm driving it home. It's Wolfie D, baby. Huh? I got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome.
You got a cap for your dome. You got a cap for your dome.
This has been a James Rock Street production.